Not a full night of games, but two very important ones. We'll tell you what went down between the Denver Nuggets and the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Boston Celtics and the Toronto Raptors.
And could Igor Kokoschkov's run in Phoenix be over after just 62 games?
And we touch on some patches and curses? What? It's the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. As always on Wednesday, I'm one of your co-hosts, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast, and I am excited to not be talking about Anthony Davis today.
We're not? Oh, okay. Can we, instead of talking about the Celtics? I'm John Corrales of the Locked On Celtics podcast, beat writer for MassLive.com. You find me on Twitter at RedsArmy_John.
As you can tell, we're both excited about our teams right now, so, which means we should touch on some other teams, which will maybe make us feel a little bit better. So, as always, we recap the night of action that you didn't manage to watch because it went late, and we call this the too long didn't watch, starting with the Orlando Magic taking on the New York Knicks. Knicks win 108-103. Basically, the Knicks bench won this one. That's all you need to know. 75 points for the Knicks bench to 7 for the Orlando Magic.
That is such a ridiculous number, 75-7. This is a blown opportunity for the Orlando Magic, who are fighting for the 8th seed, who want the 8th seed, and to be outscored 30-13 in the fourth quarter in this loss is just brutal. That this one could come back to haunt them.
Yeah, Knicks have won 3 out of the last 4. Are they back? They have free agent destination now?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, Kyrie, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, all 3 going right there.
But I'm going to bring that up with Kyrie Irving because I think it's got to be asked. But we'll talk about that in just a second. Next was the late game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Denver Nuggets, a 121-112 win for the Denver Nuggets. That's a real big win for them as they look to keep pace in the Western Conference. Also, OKC came back into this one with Russell Westbrook on the bench. They went on a 16-4 run, managed to tie it up, erasing that 18-point lead for Denver. But Paul Millsap was an absolute monster in the fourth quarter for the Nuggets. He finished with, 12-10, had a huge block there too, and basically just played amazing defense that really kind of sparked him to a victory.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with the comeback. The Thunder went on a 27-6 run to take the lead and erase a big lead for the Nuggets. And then they answered with a 24-12 run of their own to close it out. Obviously, Jokic is just a beast, a monster. 36 points, 10 assists, 9 rebounds, doing it all for them. And they also got a big Jamal Murray game. He was hot early. Just a very impressive win for the Thunder. I mean, for the Nuggets to hold off the Thunder, who came back. That's one of those games where when you give up that late run, it could spiral out of control. To come back after they had taken the lead is very impressive, and I think is a very strong indicator of them being able to fight adversity, and that's going to be big when it comes to playoff time.
Yeah, OKC had all the momentum in this one. Paul George had a pretty off night. He was 7 of 24 from the field, but he started to get it going early on in the fourth quarter that really kind of sparked that team. And the fact that Denver managed to wrestle that away and, like you said, go on that run to kind of seal the game up for him, give him that big win was, I don't know, this one was a bit eye-opening, I thought. And as you said, Jokic was excellent. By the way, Paul George finished with 25-8-7 on the night, but him struggling early was just too much for that team to overcome, and they weren't able to do it. Finally, last game that we're touching on here, which we're going to dive in a little bit deeper, was the Toronto Raptors almost just dismantling the Boston Celtics, the tune of 118-95. John, what went on in this one?
The second quarter happened, and this was just another Celtics run of forgetting how to play basketball, and this has plagued them throughout the season. their losses have been brutal losses for the most part. Like, so they had a 32-30 lead coming out of the first quarter. They looked good. They were moving the ball. It was fairly crisp. I mean, they were in a fight with the Raptors and what we expected.
I was going to say, that's how it should be probably.
Right. And then the Raptors went on this monster run. I think at one point they were outscoring the Celtics 30-9 in the second quarter. And that it was just a collapse. And this is where the Celtics get in their own way. The Celtics have a bad habit of letting and this goes back to what I was just saying about Denver. It may be coloring how impressed I was with Denver. The Celtics don't have very often that counterpunch that we saw from the Nuggets. They let things linger. They came out in that second quarter and were doing all right. And then they missed a few shots and the Raptors hit a few shots and went on like a 9-0 run that I thought Brad Stevens should call a timeout. And Brad Stevens has this habit of letting these runs go a little longer than I think he should. And at that point, once it was 9-0 and he didn't take that timeout, things started to unravel. The Celtics started to let mistakes linger. They started to get into modes where the passes that they had been making weren't being made all of a sudden. There was a break earlier in the game where Jaylen Brown got the ball and he made the right pass, a simple pass, the right pass, the right time to Gordon Hayward, who laid it in, got an and one. In that run, after it was 9-0, he got the ball on a break, fumbled it, had Marcus Smart wide open in the corner, didn't make that pass, ended up plowing right into, I think, Marc Gasol, drew a charge. And those two plays were the dichotomy of the Celtics, where the mistakes pile up and they lose focus versus making the right basketball play. And it piled up in the second quarter to the tune of 36-13. And after that, look, the Celtics lost the third quarter by 6. They won the fourth quarter by 4, but at that point it's garbage time. It doesn't really matter. But the rest of the game was close. They have these bad habits, and it happened against Chicago. And anytime they have these frustrating losses, there's always one quarter where they either give up 40 points or they can't hit shots and everything cascades and it falls completely out of control.
Yeah, that kind of, I guess, sums up the night. So what do you make of Kyrie's comments after the game? Brad Stevens' comments as well. Stevens, I think, said they were just taking too many shortcuts defensively. You see Kyrie Irving being very visibly kind of upset on the bench. He's been kind of frustrated all season. Is there significant concern in Boston about what's happening to this team right now?
At this point, yeah. The feeling in Boston is there is like an existential dread going on right now with Celtics fans. It feels worse than it actually is. The worst case scenario for the Celtics right now is they stay in the fifth seed and they face the Sixers, where and nobody's afraid of the Sixers in the playoffs, at least not Boston.
Not while you have Horford there.
Yeah, and I was talking to Sean Woodley of Lockdown Raptors. They're not afraid of the Sixers in the playoffs. So the worst-case scenario for these guys is they're the fifth seed, they play the Sixers, and then they still have to go on the road to face Toronto and Milwaukee if they get that far. The best-case scenario is what? They get to the third seed and they face the Nets in the first round. They still have to go to Toronto and Milwaukee. So it's much more likely that they're going to finish now, it feels like, in the somewhere 3, 4, 5. Their first round matchup, I don't think, is going to be an issue. So the feeling, the emotions in Boston are very strong. The reality in Boston is their path is pretty much laid out for them. That first round opponent, I think they should get past no matter who it is. And at this point, it's just a matter of trying to get these guys to figure out if they can get on the same page. Brad Stevens afterwards did say that they take a lot of shortcuts, and they did. You can see them flying all over the court. They weren't crisp in their rotations. You can tell when the Celtics are playing bad defense when you see them flying past three-point shooters on up fakes. When they're playing good defense, they stay disciplined, they stay down, they keep a hand up, and they don't go flying past those three-point shooters on the perimeter, and they were flying past them against the Raptors. Kyrie is frustrated, and if anything, the biggest concern is that these frustrations mount and they don't get it together, and it becomes a second round playoff exit, and then Kyrie reconsiders his future. So right now, this feels like a kind of crossroads for the Celtics. They do come home and they have a tough back to back with Portland next, but they play different at home, and if they can get it together at home and leave Boston with actually they have a game on Sunday. They have a little bit of a homestand coming up, and then after that they go on the road. But if they can get some good feelings together at home, then everybody calms down and things look better. Boston remains a dangerous team, but right now this is definitely one of the lowest points of the season.
Yeah, I mean, and Brad Stevens even said, you know, he thought they played well on the road at Milwaukee, where they lost just by a point a couple nights ago. So I don't know if it's necessarily time for like a full blown panic. Maybe like a little minor existential crisis wouldn't be the worst thing, I think, to have to go through at this point. So, you know, the offseason here in the NBA is going to be huge, and it's potentially going to shape a lot of the future to come. So are you more nervous now about Kyrie maybe rethinking things, or are you still pretty confident that he's going to be back there next season?
I'm confident that he's coming back, but much less confident that he's coming back. Just because you can't weather this type of media blitz. The thoughts just creep into your head like, well, maybe it's not as guaranteed as we thought it was. Like at the beginning of the season, I never thought anything of it until the rumors started to pop up and his frustration started to be like to mount and be more negative or feel more negative. So I still think that he's coming back. I still think that the odds are pretty good. But whereas before, like a month ago, I was at 90%. Maybe now I'm at 80, 75%. So I think that he's frustrated with how the season has gone. I don't think he anticipated it being as difficult as it is. And I just feel like he might be reconsidering some things, or at least open to some other things if he thinks there's a better situation somewhere else. I don't know. So I'll just leave it at that.
I hope he doesn't sign with Clutch.
Oh.
Warriors fans, Draymond Green, that can't be anything good for you guys. But no, I mean, I also don't think he's going to have anything decided right now. But I think it's something that's worth keeping an eye on, because you've got to wonder if he's just kind of somewhat planning where it's just like, I left because I don't like the media here, which would be probably a bad reason to make a career choice over. But he clearly hates what's going on right now.
He hates what's going on. I don't know why he would be upset with the Boston media. Like, I know I'm part of the Boston media. I'm in those locker rooms. Nobody's asking, like, insanely tough questions. The questions, all of the questions are fair. And if he goes to New York, I've seen the New York media in action. I was part of the New York media before. Those questions get much more direct, much quicker. So I don't think that going to New York, as he is rumored to be considering, or whatever that is, I don't think that's going to be the answer. I think he's just, and I more think that he's just frustrated with the situation, and he's sick of answering questions, and he sees a lot more that he lets on, and he lumps everything in together. The stuff he sees on social media, the stuff that gets thrown at him, the stuff that does make its way from the social media to the mainstream media to the locker room, like all of that stuff adds up, and I think he's just frustrated with everything. So I don't think that it's the Boston media per se. It's the whole situation, and it was his name getting brought up in rumors again when that's the last thing he wanted for this season, and the frustration of this season not going well. So it's a combination of all of that for Kyrie.
Yeah, so it's obviously something we're going to be keeping an eye on here on the Locked On NBA podcast. And if you want to know everything that's going on around the association Monday through Friday, we've got you covered. We recap the games from the night before that you didn't watch. Listen to the podcast. Go be a smarter basketball fan than the rest of your friends. Best way to do it, of course, is to listen and subscribe and leave a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcast from for the Locked On NBA podcast. All right, so rumors coming out of Phoenix that their rookie head coach, Igor Keskosov, is maybe going to be on the hot seat. Is this smart? Has he been a good coach this year? Is this just have to do with rookie coaches going through some pains? What do you make of this story so far?
I think that it's, first of all, typical Phoenix.
Is the most Phoenix thing ever.
Isn't it? Like, you just got this guy. You just hired him. Let him do his thing. Give it time. Give the rookie coach time to learn the ropes. Like he's a veteran NBA coach, but give the rookie head coach time to figure it out. Give him a consistent roster. Let these guys figure it out as young players. I think this is an overreaction. There's a new front office. They have just gone through their worst losing streak in history. There is a negative feeling, and there's this feeling that's being portrayed out there. And I certainly don't know what's going on inside that locker room, but this whole feeling like he's lost the team. Well, the season's almost over. Don't fire this guy now and then bring in another. Like, this is how you ruin players. This is how you ruin a Devin Booker. This is how you ruin DeAndre Ayton. Because how many coaches has Devin Booker had already? Like, a system, you have a system, and then another system, and then another system, and then another system. You're trying to bring in a point guard to run a certain system. You still haven't found your point guard. You still haven't figured out what's happening within the locker room, what your rotations are. Like, let the coach figure all of that stuff out. It's frustrating to me to hear a team considering this. It's overreaction, and even if I'm sorry to cut you off, Jake, even if you think there's a potentially better coach out there, how much better? Is it worth ruining any level of continuity? Is it, unless he is so brutally lost, unless he's so horrible that every player in the locker room is just done playing for him, then I don't see why they would consider this.
Yeah, this is weird. So I've got some Phoenix Suns coaching stats for you. They've had four coaches since 2016. It's 2019. That's probably not ideal. And only two head coaches in the Suns' history have made it more than four seasons. This is not exactly an organization that is stable and is prone to smart decisions. I think you look at them and they're maybe one of the worst run franchises league-wide. Just bad in the front office from top down and ownership too. And this is a team that's been not winning for 5+ seasons now. And it's not easy to turn that around overnight. But at the same point, I don't know if I can say he's actually a good head coach, because you look at kind of what they're going through. They had a 17-game losing streak, which they just snapped, and that's nice. But, you know, you look at some of the guys on the roster other than Devin Booker. They've got Kelly Oubre, who's been there for 31 games now. He hasn't really kind of significantly improved. Josh Jackson hasn't really grown as a second-year player. Mikal Bridges looks okay. TJ Warren looks okay. DeAndre Ayton in his rookie years, fine. I don't see a ton of growth, not necessarily that you would see it. So I maybe understand why, because they seem like they're having some chemistry issues. It sounds like Devin Booker is really unhappy there at the moment. And if he's your star guy, maybe if he's unhappy, you have to move on from the head coach. But at the same point, there's nothing to say that he's not going to improve as a head coach going forward. And if you're Phoenix and your initial reaction is to fire him, given the history that you've had, maybe you need to go against what your gut reaction would be because it's been wrong for so long, right?
Just do the opposite of what you think. It's like the George Costanza. Yeah. I don't know what exactly the level of discomfort in the locker room. And I'm not saying there might not be a reason. I have a hard time finding that reason. Again, unless he has completely alienated everybody in that locker room. And if that's the case, fine. But I feel like there has to be some time to let these guys come together. And part of being a good coach is having good players. Like,
yeah,
you got to give the guy good players and give those players that you have, these young players, time to grow as well. So it's let the guy struggle. I'm a big believer in building the continuity, and it feels like a knee-jerk reaction. I mean, you look at like Lloyd Pierce in Atlanta. The Hawks had a 10-game losing streak earlier, but now what's happened? They've come along and played better lately. They're still not good. They're still not, but they have Trae Young, who has been playing better. And when Trae Young plays better, look, they just took the Rockets to the edge and almost beat Houston. They have a win over the Lakers. They have a win over who else? The Clippers. They beat the Thunder. So they beat the Sixers. My point is, young coaches, like young players, need time to develop. And if you're going to keep introducing these systems to these young guys, then you're going to hurt the player's development by constantly asking them to learn new things with new coaches. It's too much. It gets to be too much.
Also, this could have maybe been solved by picking a different player. There's one I have in mind, number one overall, that your head coach is somewhat familiar with. And maybe that would have made a lot of sense. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's a weird thing, and I'm still of the mindset of just go against your gut reaction, Phoenix. It's like when, the Patriots called the Giants about Odell Beckham Jr., and they're like, well, if the Patriots want him, we shouldn't trade him away because that must mean there's something here. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of like the approach they need to take here, that, oh, normally we make bad decisions. We're planning on making a bad decision. Don't make the bad decision. Look, I'm not saying he's a good coach, and it's weird to try and figure out what level of culpability he has in this. And when their roster's got tons of lottery picks on it, but maybe those weren't the best lottery picks, and you see it based off of what the draft just was. So I don't know. This whole story's weird. It's, again, the most Phoenix thing to do, which – probably means that he is going to be fired because of all
of
this.
Of course.
So maybe there's a way that John and I can help the Phoenix Suns. In the next segment coming up here in a moment, we are going to be talking some curses, some patches, a couple other things. We like to have fun in the third segment. But before we do that, look, if you're in a fantasy basketball league, it is likely playoff time for you. You've got bragging rights on the line. You've probably got some money on the line, and you want to win. Best way to do that is the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, hosted by Josh Lloyd, who hosts the Monday edition of Locked On NBA. He's going to give you the waiver wire pickups you need, who to start, who to sit, anything that gives you an advantage to win your league, win some money, win some bragging rights. So make sure you listen and subscribe to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. So it just came out from, I think it was the Sports Business Journal, that the jersey patches have been a pretty big success here in the NBA, and it's brought in a lot of revenue. And I know people were kind of worried about this in the beginning, but overall, this was just kind of a no-brainer easy thing to do, right?
With the patches?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a decent revenue generator. It's raised about $150 million, which is $50 million more than they anticipated. It's non-intrusive. They match the colors of the uniform.
For the most part.
I don't mind them, but some people do. if you do mind them, then you know what? You got to get used to them because they're sticking around. They're going to expand this program. And luckily, they're not going to expand the patches. They're going to stay the same size. But what you're going to do is you're probably going to see those patches, not just in the uniforms that the players are wearing. The next step is getting them out there into the stores where every authentic jersey you buy also has that advertising patch on it. So, yeah, that's a in the grand scheme of things, when, you know, we're talking about a $7 billion lead, a league, $150 million isn't the biggest deal. But, hey, you throw an extra couple million dollars onto that, the salary cap, or an extra whatever it ends up being, $1 million on the salary cap. That's the difference between a luxury tax payment versus not keeping a player versus not. So this little bit of money could swing things ever so slightly for certain teams down the road.
Yeah, and look, I think it's good for small market teams too, because it's just some extra money that they get, which is probably never a bad thing for them. They're relatively, like you said, unobtrusive. At this point, when I watch games, I don't even notice them really. It's kind of like I've gone blind to them, which is maybe not good for the NBA, but that just shows you the level of like how much it's not in the normal consciousness of things. You also see some innovative ones too. The Utah Jazz have the Five for the Fight cancer charity listed on there. That's really cool that you're able to do things like that, and that maybe opens the door for some other real good philanthropic promotions of things. But what I want to know, John, and I probably have an idea for what you're going to say here, is, you know, you have a job, you work every day, you put on, you know, kind of a similar outfit. If you were to have your own uniform outfit patch, what would it be?
I'm kind of curious what you think it should be.
It was like, you're the bus guy. You're going to pick Dunkin' Donuts, right?
Oh, that's a good one.
Like,
yeah.
Of course you are.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm yeah. Yeah.
Just no argument on that one.
No, I was just going to basically say like anybody, any, like just a slice of pizza, just put a patch that has a slice of pizza on it, and any pizza, like any pizza company that wants to pay me can do it. But it's, I drink a lot of coffee, so that makes sense. In fact, I think it makes so much sense that the Celtics should probably have Dunkin' as their
name. I'm surprised that like that wasn't what it was to begin with. I mean, that just seemed like the simplest, like, oh, well, that's going to happen thing. I mean, the GA one looks fine, but, you know, that isn't that what all the people in Boston like to talk about is Dunkin' Donuts?
Yeah, like for people who are not from the Boston area, you need to understand how ubiquitous Dunkin' is around here. They're like literally like a mile apart. In fact, where I live, there is a it's called the Revere Beach Parkway, and you can't cross you can't take a left turn or a right turn. It's just the one that goes north, and the two lanes that go south. So there's literally a Dunkin' Donuts across the street from a Dunkin' Donuts, so it can catch the traffic on both sides. But you walk out of the one Dunkin' Donuts, and the first thing you see is the Dunkin' Donuts across the street. Like, that's how close they are. They're like within a mile of each other. They're everywhere.
That's, I mean, then it sounds like they probably want to be on like jersey patches, maybe for sports writers, if anyone from Dunkin' Donuts listens to the podcast.
If they want to make a microphone the shape of a Dunkin' Donuts coffee cup, like, I'm in. Like, they want, sure, I'm in.
That sounds good. Look, I would probably have like a coffee sponsor too. If we've got some good ones here in New Orleans, maybe that's what I need. Because again, I like live off of that stuff like you. The other funny thing though from the other day regarding all of this, just fun stuff in the NBA, is when the Timberwolves took on the Bucks and Ja Rule putting a curse on the Timberwolves. Is that what happened? He is someone that I don't think about at all, right?
So he... He tried to put a curse on the Timberwolves, except he put the curse on the Sacramento Kings, saying the Sacramento Kings were going to lose Karl Anthony Towns. And then the Sacramento
Wait,
Kings...
Wait, that's what it was?
Yeah. It's a long, drawn-out thing. I don't pay attention to Ja Rule either, but it was so over the top that it kind of went everywhere. He screwed up. He screwed up his curse. He's trying to put a curse. He's getting into the curse thing, I guess. And then he tweeted the wrong team, and they dragged him appropriately by bringing up the fire festival that he screwed up, and he had a lame response. So it was just that's the nutshell of this stupid storyline, but it's hilarious.
Look, we need some levity here. So are there any NBA curses that you would throw on people or teams?
Yeah, I would curse the Portland Trailblazers to not go into any elevators.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. They didn't have too much. Well, I guess they had fun in there at least, right?
Yeah. Shout out to Emerson College, my alma mater, by the way. I know that elevator. And pretty hilarious that they got caught in that. I love the fact that my school was involved in this. My curse would be to Clutch Sports. And my curse on Clutch Sports would simply be none of your clients get their first choice anymore.
I'm just like pausing to take that in for a moment because I think it's like New Orleans broke out that voodoo doll, I think, to like make that a reality a couple weeks ago. Like, I'd probably throw a curse on the Lakers, I think, that might already be on some of those young guys like Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball. When we were talking about this, I literally Googled Dungeons and Dragons curses because I did not know what else to look up to try and find this. And I've seen I found a curse of fear that apparently you roll like a couple dice for. It's level one, so maybe it's not too bad here that we could throw on the Lakers. But they're kind of already going through all of this. That's like a self-imposed curse, I guess, with those young guys, kind of getting thrown under the bus like routinely. And then nothing really good coming from it from them, and they're just losing games now.
I am just glad that I don't know what you're talking about when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, I had to Google it for a reason. I had no idea either. This is the type of prep work we do for the show. This is how seriously we take it.
I love it. It's hilarious. You said Dungeons and Dragons. I was like, I have no clue where this is going.
I'm sure there's like secret nerd in you somewhere, but no, I had no idea where it was going either, but I found some curses that I think are just already on the Lakers that LeBron's basically throwing on them and it doesn't take anyone else to do it.
Yeah. I think, look, the LeBron Clutch Sports curse on the Lakers is real. I find it very interesting how LeBron takes over any franchise he goes to. Even as proud as the Lakers, you want to call it the curse. I want to call it like venom taking over a body. Like that's essentially whatever you want to call it. LeBron on your team. That's what happens.
Yeah. And now that all of our listeners know how little prep work we put into the podcast, we should probably stop there. That was a good one though. See, some nerd came out there.
Oh, I got a little bit in me.
Yeah, that was pretty good. All right, so that's going to do it for the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget, make sure you subscribe, leave a 5-star rating. And on Wednesday, I'm Jake Madison, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast, and you can follow me on Twitter at NolaJake.
And I am John Corrales from the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Reds Army_John.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back with you all next week.